From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Sunday, two armed men were shot dead by an off-duty traffic cop in Garland, Texas, at the location of the Muhammad Art Exhibit and Contest, where cartoonists competed for a $10,000 prize for the best depiction of the Prophet Muhammad. Pamela Geller, the organizer of the event, says this is all about free speech. Not everyone agrees. This hour on Point, free speech, hate speech, and where is the line? You can join us on air or online. What do you make of the contest of asking people to create caricatures of a holy figure? Join us at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from New York City is Tina Sussman, national correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. She wrote the article, Texas Attack Refocuses Attention on the Fine Line Between Free Speech and Hate Speech, for the newspaper. Last night, she covered the Penn Literary Gala, where the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo received the Freedom of Expression Courage Award. Tina Sussman, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So before we get to the event last night in New York, give us the latest on the situation in Garland, Texas.
The latest basically is that, we did speak to one of the gunman's mothers yesterday, Sharon Sufi. Her son, Nadir Sufi, was one of the two gunmen that was shot dead in the Texas attack. And, you know, she is saying that she has absolutely no idea what could have led her son to do this, and that he had a normal American upbringing, was the way she put it, in Texas. The FBI has said that Sufi's partner, Elton Simpson, had been on their list, a watch list, so to speak, for having lied to agents about a plan he had to go to Somalia some years back and engage in jihad. But it just appears that nobody thought that either one of these two had any kind of violent tendencies, even though Elton Simpson had been posting things on a Twitter account, not under his name, that seemed to support ISIS and jihad. Mm.
Well, the White House called the attack an act of terror. In fact, the Islamic State claimed credit for the attack. Is there evidence that the gunmen were directed by ISIS or inspired by them?
It appears so far that they were more inspired by ISIS, although investigators are still trying to look into that. But it looks now as if they did not have direct links with ISIS. More likely, it appears that they were so-called lone wolves acting in support of ISIS on their own, which we've seen many times. And that, of course, is one of the biggest concerns that that law enforcement has in this country, is the lone wolves who follow ISIS on Twitter and on social media and get inspired and then decide they're going to take things into their own hands on behalf of ISIS.
The cartoon contest in Texas offered a $10,000 award for the best caricature of the Prophet Muhammad. Tell us more about who organized this event and what their intentions might have been here.
Well, the organizer of this event is a organization called the American Freedom Defense Initiative. It's led by a woman named Pamela Geller. She grew up here in Long Island, New York. And she has a background in journalism. She once worked for the Daily News in New York and the New York Observer. But she says she was inspired to start blogging about what she calls the dangers of radical Islam after the September 11, 2001 attacks. She says that she is as much a defender of free speech as the French magazine Charlie Hebdo or anyone else. However, the Southern Poverty Law Center and other critics say that she's basically a hate monger because she's devoted to what they call Muslim bashing.
And so what was the reaction in Texas then to this event coming to them?
Well, it didn't get a huge turnout. There was about 200 people there. Pamela Geller says that she chose to hold the event in this particular spot in Garland, Texas, because there had been a Islamic conference there a couple of weeks earlier about ways that was focused on ways to lessen negative images of Islam. And she felt that it was her duty to use that same spot to kind of focus on what she considers some of the negatives of Islam. There had been some increased security there, but there was apparently no inkling that there was going to be any violent attacks. And this is the first time that Pamela Geller's group, which has had a high profile since for several years now, has come under violent attack.
So last night you covered the Penn Literary Awards in New York, as I mentioned. Tell us why that is significant as we're talking today about free speech and hate speech.
The Penn Literary Awards, well, they usually don't get that much attention. Obviously, this year they got huge attention because by awarding this Freedom of Expression Prize to Charlie Hebdo this year, that angered some very high-profile Penn members who pulled out of the awards. More than 200 of them signed a letter protesting, saying that awarding Charlie Hebdo for what they called hate-mongering or racism was just not the right thing to do. Penn is a literary organization devoted to free speech, but they said that Charlie Hebdo had kind of crossed the line from free speech to incitement. So there was kind of a tension last night to see, well, is this dispute going to, going to kind of come out into the open when the Charlie Hebdo editors go up to accept this award? It did not. Obviously, all the people that were there last night, even if they didn't openly embrace the award, nobody stood up to oppose it. And most of the people I spoke to seemed to feel that it was great that they were getting this award, and that the debate that emerged from awarding Charlie Hebdo this was just another sign of the value of free speech, that people could openly discuss this. And they said that's exactly what these Penn Awards are supposed to do, encourage discourse. Mm.
Tina Sussman is national correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Tina, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Just to let our listeners know, we requested an interview with Pam Geller from the American Freedom Defense Initiative, and we did not hear back. I'd like to bring in now from Charlotte, North Carolina, Linda Sarsour. She's executive director of the Arab American Association of New York and senior strategist with the campaign to Take on Hate. Linda, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
So give us your sense of the reaction within the Muslim community to the events in Texas.
I mean, obviously horrific. These gunmen, unfortunately, saying they are acting in defense of the Prophet and Islam, and obviously we condemn that. But what's really interesting about this conversation is we keep talking about free speech as if Pamela Geller and her organization are like these freedom of speech heroes, and she's not at all a freedom of speech hero. Actually, she was part of a campaign to ban Al Jazeera from coming to the United States of America, so she can talk about free speech all she wants, and I'm not going to believe her. She had to go all the way to Garland, Texas, because she's originally a New Yorker, to have this event. The intention of the event was for it to be an anti-Muslim event. She is an anti-Muslim bigot. She is not a free speech hero. That's not the mission of her organization. So for me, I support her, and I will fight for her to continue to be a racist and a bigot, but she shouldn't be upset when we call her a racist and a bigot, because I also have the right to do that.
So where do you draw the line, then, between free speech and hate speech?
For me, I mean, my line is pretty far. I mean, I think the standard for free speech is pretty high, but I think once it crosses the line to incitement of violence against a group of people, I think we do need to draw a line there. And if you remember when Pastor Terry Jones from Florida, kept on saying, I'm going to burn Korans, and even, David Patriots was like, look, this could incite violence, in places like Afghanistan where we have American soldiers. And he did not listen, and he continued on and burned Qurans, and then we found out that soldiers were killed. I'm not saying that we defend the violence of that response or if that response is right. That's not the point here. But if you know that there's a possibility that this level of speech or burning Qurans or whatever is potentially going to harm others, including Americans, my question is it good judgment on our part or on the part of people who continue to say this is about free speech? And I also don't think we should be condoning as Americans the vilification and dehumanization of an entire faith community. In Garland, Texas, Muslims could have used their First Amendment rights to go and protest outside of her event. She brings people to protest outside of our events all the time across the country.
And Muslim leaders in Texas told their followers not to picket or protest.
There was not one human being that was Muslim that was outside of that event except for these two gunmen who were not even from Texas. And they came all the way from Arizona.
And so the cartoon contest organized there was billed as a free speech event, a rallying point, so to speak, for cartoonists. You say these events and events like them have consequences. I'm curious. Does the Muslim community here fear backlash after what happened this weekend?
Absolutely. I mean, Texas, as you know, there's been a lot of tensions. Recently at a Capitol Day, people went up to, you know, practice their First Amendment rights at the state Capitol Day, and they were met by protesters. There was recently an Iraqi guy who just came from Iraq like 20 days before. He gets shot there. There was an arson at a mosque where the imam actually forgave the arsonist. I mean, these hate crimes against Muslims have increased dramatically over the course of the past few years. And mosque oppositions across the country, including Pamela Geller being the ringleader of the, you know, Ground Zero mosque controversy. People think it's just one mosque. We have mosque oppositions across the country. So what I keep telling people is that people's words have consequences, and unfortunately the Muslim community has been at the receiving end of those consequences because of people like Pamela Geller. I mean, it's not just her.
Linda Sarsour, we just have about 45 seconds left here before the break. You're a senior strategist at an organization called Take On Hate. Mm-hmm. To your mind, what's the solution then here?
The solution is that I call on my fellow Americans of all faiths and all backgrounds to stand up to people like Pamela Geller and say she does not represent our American values, that we will not allow people like her to divide us as a nation. And Take On Hate is an educational campaign to bring people together, to talk together, for people to meet each other, to understand each other.
Linda Sarsour is executive director of the Arab American Association of New York, senior strategist with the campaign to Take On Hate, takeonhate.org. Linda Sarsour, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Again, listeners, we requested an interview with Pam Geller from the American Freedom Defense Initiative, and we did not hear back from her. We're talking this hour about free speech and hate speech and the recent events, the recent news from the cartoon contest in Garland, Texas. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. More after this break. This is On Point. We're talking about recent events in Texas where two would-be assassins were killed at a Mohammed cartoon contest and big questions about free speech. Speaking with CNN on Monday, the organizer of the Mohammed cartoon contest, Pamela Geller, defended her event in Texas as an expression of free speech.
My event was about freedom of speech, period. Freedom of speech is the First Amendment. It's the first and most protected political speech, the most protected, because who would decide what's good and what's forbidden? These arbitrary voices, you, the Muslim Brotherhood, we need to have this conversation. And the fact that we have to spend upwards of $50,000 in security speaks to how dangerous and how in trouble freedom of speech is in this country.
I'm joined now from Chicago by Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, previously at the Birmingham News and the Arizona Republic. Scott, welcome back. Nice to have you.
Hey, Jane. Thanks for having me.
And joining us from Philadelphia is Gordon Coonfield. He's professor of communications at Villanova University. He focuses on visual media and pop culture. Gordon, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Jane. Thank you for having me today.
Well, thank you both for being here. Scott, I'll start with you. You're a cartoonist. You deal with these issues all the time. What's your opinion about what happened in Texas, about the cartoons depicting Mohammed there? Did it cross a line?
No, of course not. It was one of the things that's great and also simultaneously ugly about freedom of speech, which is you have a right to be stupid. And she, Pamela Geller, who you just heard talk there, was exercising her right at a private ticketed event. The proper response to that, if you oppose it, is to picket it, to boycott it, to boycott businesses that she deals with. There's a myriad of ways to do this. Coming in and shooting or blowing yourself up is not the proper approach. You had a guest earlier who said, well, you know, the events have consequences. And that sounds to me like code somehow of saying that, you know, Charlie Hebdo or the Draw Muhammad event, somehow they had this coming. Well, that's a terrible idea. I mean, are these bad ideas? And is Geller, you know, espousing a bad and maybe even evil notion? Yeah. But you, guess what? You have a right to do that.
Gordon Coonfield, how do you see it?
Well, and this is difficult because in part I agree. I think it's unfortunate that we've allowed Pamela Geller and her organization to frame this issue for us as a nation. Wrapping a brick in a flag and throwing it through somebody's window does not constitutionally protect that kind of activity. And while I agree that, yes, this is a country that is defined and to a great extent by the way we privilege freedom of speech, And I agree that this is an exercise of free speech. We also have a tradition of thinking that words are somehow different than actions, that they're on a different order. But words are a way of acting on the world. Creating representations means you're creating a world, and creating that world when you have power behind it, like Geller does, and money behind it, has consequences for people's lives.
Here she is again, Pamela Geller, speaking on CNN on Monday, saying that freedom of speech is put at risk when people are worried about retaliation after saying or doing something which might be considered offensive.
Increasingly, we're abridging our freedoms so as not to offend savages. The very idea that if something offends me or I'm insulted by something, I'll kill you, and that way I can get my way. And somehow this is okay with members of the elite media and academia is outrageous.
Scott Stantis, you've been threatened over a cartoon. Tell us what happened.
I was working at the Arizona Republic, and it was in 1992, and it was a fight to have Martin Luther King Day proclaimed as an official state holiday. And the campaign was pretty racially charged. I was in favor of having the MLK Day. It seemed appropriate to honor one of the greatest American figures of the 20th century. It seemed like a no-brainer. But as the campaign progressed, it became uglier and uglier. Sadly, the amendment failed. And the next day, I did a cartoon of a fellow dressed in a Ku Klux Klan outfit with a no MLK Day button at a cocktail party saying, "Why, yes, I am from Arizona. How could you tell?" When I came in, this is how quaint this era was. I had an answering machine in my office. I pushed the button. You know, the red light was blinking. I pushed the button, and a voice came out that said, "After I kill you, I'm going to kill your two kids." And this was before caller ID, so we never did find out who it was. But it was chilling, and I had police protection for a few months, and it was, uncomfortable. But it did give me a very strong taste of what it's like to be threatened for an idea and going after, you know, an ugly idea.
So to your mind, where is the line then, Scott? Can cartoonists go too far?
No. Let me deconstruct the question a little bit, and maybe I'm wrong, but please feel free, Jane, feel free to correct me. But is it legitimate that elicits an attack like Charlie Hebdo or the gunman in Texas over the weekend? And that is absolutely, positively, unequivocally, no. Violence is never an answer in a discussion, ever. Ever. I need to say this one more time. Ever. So is there a line? Not to me, there is. I'm a mainstream cartoonist with the Chicago Tribune. I have editors. Their job is to edit. And that's what they do. So I'm on more often than I'd like to say, they have to rein me in. But would I do a cartoon like the Muhammad cartoons? I wouldn't, because I think provocation for provocation's sake is juvenile and counterproductive.
Where's the line for you, Gordon Kuhnfield?
Well, this is always the difficult problem, is where to draw the line. But I think that if we think about the First Amendment and the right to free speech, less as I get the right to say whatever I feel like saying or whatever comes to my mind, and more of a way to protect not the most popular, most powerful ideas, but to protect the opportunity for the still small voice to be heard in our culture. And Geller's organization, this is not a fringe idea. As your guest said earlier, anti-Islamic violence is on the rise in this country. The jokes, the way that Muslims have been represented not only in news media but in fictional media and films traditionally. All of this creates an environment where they're being kind of symbolically annihilated. They're being destroyed with images, with symbols, before any acts of physical violence against them as people take place. But that sort of culture of representation is a precursor to that kind of actual physical violence. So I think that's the kind of thing that we need to really think about and talk about here, is how do we protect dissident voices, not how do we, grant a megaphone to somebody who's already shouting really loudly in our culture.
I just want to jump in.
Gordon, disagree. You know, with all due respect, it's not just protecting dissident voices. It's protecting all voices and ones we don't like.
Agreed. But this is not – I totally agree with you that we need to protect all of these voices. And I, and again, I don't think this is really – should be allowed to be about a free speech argument. This is an ethical argument, not a legal argument.
And that's well put.
Letting her cast this as a legal argument, and letting her wrap herself in the flag like this is unconscionable. And I think that's something that we need to fight against. We need to reframe this. We should be talking about how we present our ideas in a respectful, careful way. When we, as I said earlier, when we create images, we're creating worlds, and those images and those worlds have consequences for people.
Let's get some listeners in here. Jeff is first from North Garden, Virginia. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I wanted to make two observations. First of all, I'm disappointed at the angle I think that this program is taking,
okay,
and criticizing Geller. And I completely disagree with her myself. I wouldn't participate or support what she was doing, but I believe she had the right to do it. It was a private ticketed event. This wasn't her wrapping a brick in a flag and throwing it through a window, as was said earlier. And I believe in the old adage that used to be the norm, I think, in our nation, that I might disagree with what you're saying, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. Then secondly, I was struck by the contrast with, say, avant-garde artists who have done things that were offensive to Christians, like having art exhibits with the crucifix and urine and things like that. I completely disagree with that, too. I happen to be a Christian in particular, so it's especially offensive to me, but I would defend to the death their right to do that. If we're going to live in a free society, it's not speech that is neutral and non-offensive that needs to be defended. It's exactly speech that's controversial. So those are my two observations.
Jeff, thank you. Good to hear your voice on this. Camille is in Charleston, South Carolina. Camille, welcome to the program.
Hello, Jane. Thank you, too, for taking my call.
Yes.
This is a legal argument, and the Supreme Court has found that shouting fire in a crowded movie theater is not protected speech. This was a publicized event intended to bait the Muslim community. And now, if your guests could let me know, were there any professional cartoonists involved?
There were professional illustrators, yes.
There were, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was entirely what it was made out of, because my understanding is that they were inviting people to come, and this may be incorrect in terms of the news that I have heard, but that also members of this woman's community were going to have large amounts of people within this space making cartoons of and instructing them as to how to make cartoons of Muhammad. Is that incorrect?
I had not heard that. Have you, Jane?
No, I haven't. Camille, let me pick that up, though, and talk about the legal definition of this, because I think that's a good point. One of our listeners, Chris Parker, says the Supreme Court decided that in Schneider versus Phelps, they decided this issue, shut out hate in your life, but don't ask our government to outlaw it. What is the legal definition here, Scott Stannis? Where do we stand from a legal perspective?
Oh, gosh, I'm no lawyer. I'm just a cartoonist.
Yeah.
My understanding from my perspective and the way I apply my trade is with looking at libel and slander, which is with Falwell versus Flint, or Flint versus Falwell, rather. That falls by the wayside. Can you the often quoted Oliver Wendell Holmes quote of "you can't shout fire in a crowded theater" actually has been overturned, and what it meant. What he meant was you can't shout it if it endangers someone. You can, but in fact, you can shout it in a movie theater. So there's some legal nuance there.
Gordon, you talk about how these images remind you of Nazi images of the past. Can you give us an example of that?
Oh, absolutely. The image that I have in mind is actually advertisement for a Nazi propaganda film called The Eternal Jew. And it was sort of staged as a documentary, but in fact it was nothing but a piece of extended hate speech. Quite likely it would be protected in this country, although I hope it would be picketed and vilified. But the point I want to make is that if you go to the American Holocaust Museum, or if you look at this history of Nazi propaganda, you see that there's a rich tradition of depicting Jews in a particular way, with horns, with like long, sharp noses with evil looking eyes and beards. And I mean, it's pretty obvious, I think, to anybody who knows anything about the world that these are just really incredibly racist, stereotypical representations. And what I was really struck by was the similarities between a lot of the images of Muhammad and these images that were used as a, you know, as part of the whole program to exterminate the Jews. I just find it ironic. And the thing is, you can look at this and say, oh, well, that's just kind of accidental or whatever. But it sort of comes from a well of racist representations that's kind of just perking below the surface. And it's tapping into that. And, you know, this is not good for us. This is, you know, this is not good for us as a country at a time when we're already struggling with what it means to be a collective. And it's not good for these minorities within our nation who are American citizens, let's not forget. And representing them in this way sort of denies them some of their humanity.
A lot of listeners commenting on our website. Here's Brett, who says, while everyone has the right to express their views by denouncing, condemning, criticizing, making fun of, hating anything, no one has the right to take expressions of hatred into the realm of violence. And then one listener quoting Voltaire saying, if you want to know who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize. Let's go to the phones. John is in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I'm actually glad someone brought up Voltaire. I was going to mention him. I think it's critically important to ridicule those things that are held in high regard. Otherwise, you can't have a conversation about them. But the point I wanted to make was about this idea of baiting, race baiting, or whatever you want to call it, that you should engage in speech if it has can have a negative effect in terms of reactions of the public. That was exactly the argument that racist governors in the South made when blacks were performing sit-ins and the Freedom Riders were coming into Alabama. They said, please don't bother coming in here. You're just going to cause trouble. People are just going to act violently. And, of course, that's not a reason to refrain from engaging in free speech, particularly when it's on an important topic.
John, thank you very much for the call. Here's Derek in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, Derek. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Hi. My main comment was I have to wonder why every time these types of attacks happen, why does the media always ask, what did the person do to instigate the violence? When is it ever okay that violence is used against free speech? Why do you not ask, why are these people so violent? Why is it every time that Islam is criticized, which, by the way, Islam is not a race, it's a religious idea, is criticized, violence has to be used in return? I mean, the same people that are drawing Muhammad criticize Christians all the time, and they are not attacked by Christians in the same way. So because Christianity is not a race, just like Islam. So that's my main
Derek point. Thank you. Thank you very much. Gordon Kuhnfield, there was a recent Christian exhibit that was also quite offensive to many Christians.
I'm not sure what exhibit you're talking about.
Do you know
about
which one I'm talking about, Scott? The images of
there are
Christ.
So many.
Images of Christ, yeah, with some urine attached to it.
Oh, that was many years ago in Mapplethorpe, of course. And you know, so there were protests, and there were, you know, the presumption of violent attack doesn't happen when Hillsborough Baptist Church does their horrible protests at the burial of Army veterans. You know, God hates homosexuals, although they use a slur. You know, the response to that has been that veterans have lined up and blocked them from view from the people at the funeral. There's a difference here. I mean, when Nazis march in Skokie, you can counter march against them, but there wasn't violence. I mean, so I think Derek had an excellent point.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. Glad you're joining us for the On Point podcast, sponsored by Audible.com. With Audible.com, you can listen to many of the books we feature on the show while driving, on the train, wherever you want. Talk about multitasking. They have over 180,000 book titles, plus magazines and newspapers. And now, On Point listeners can try it for free. Go to audible.com/onpoint and get a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial. Just go to audible.com/onpoint, download a free title, and listen. It's that easy.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about free speech, hate speech, and the recent events in Texas. Cartoonist Gary Trudeau spoke with NBC's Meet the Press recently and said that he personally would not draw the Prophet Muhammad.
As societies, we collectively decide what's untouchable, but I don't have the right to decide what is sacred and holy and profane for someone else. All societies come to a consensus about that.
That's Gary Trudeau of Doonesbury fame. And then speaking in an interview with Charlie Rose on PBS on Monday, the editor-in-chief of the French magazine Charlie Hebdo said that there is no comparison between this Texas event and what they do at Charlie Hebdo.
We don't organize contests. We just do our work. We comment the news. When Mahomet jumped out of the news, we drew Mahomet. But if he didn't, we didn't.
My guest today, Scott Stanis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, and Gordon Kuhnfield, professor of communications at Villanova University. So many callers want to get in here. Let's go to Alex in Tipton, Iowa. Hi, Alex. Glad you called. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have one. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, I just have one simple question. If we're going to consider, you know, drawing a cartoon crossing the line, shouldn't we start considering stomping on the American flag crossing the line? I mean, there's all these people out here doing the stomp challenge, and it's disrespectful to the men and women that died for that flag.
Just as offensive in your mind. Alex, thank you. Carl is in Ithaca, New York. Carl, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Thank you.
Sure.
I'm curious if an exhibit like this, where Christ was the object of the cartoons, especially in an area like that in Texas, what would have happened? Now, I'm not. First of all, not condoning what those two people did, and I'm glad that off-duty officer was a pretty good shot and, you know, ended it. But I'm really curious. I remember, and I know about the Mapplethorpe thing, the Robert Mapplethorpe. There was also an exhibit at the Brooklyn Museum from a British group of artists, and one of them had some questionable images, I think, of Mary. And Rudy Giuliani came out pretty strongly against it. Now, it was a different time and a different place, but I'm not so sure we're not so far from something violent happening in response. I know this is kind of a conjecture, but again, I don't know as far as the that exhibit being with Christ as the object, I think it could have been pretty ugly.
Carl, thank you. Scott Stanis?
Let me jump in.
Yeah, respond to this, please. And also, the Mapplethorpe exhibit is not the one I was referring to. It was the André Sauret exhibit in the 1980s.
Right. And the Mapplethorpe one ran concurrent and had some other images that disturbed people because it showed people might be gay. Carl, and I just want to jump in on what he said, and he's right. I mean, if these were images of Christ, the New York Times, for instance, refused to run the Charlie Hebdo covers even after the attacks, and that to me was journalistic malfeasance. It was malpractice. It made no sense because it then transcended itself from just being, you know, a silly, vacuous, almost childish publication in France to the news story. And so they would take great pains to describe the cover, but never show it. And what upsets me about this is this is the same publication that showed the crucifix in urine. They ran that image, I believe, almost a half a page in the New York Times. But they also ran cartoons from, stay with me here, the Tehran Holocaust Denier Cartoon Competition. And they ran those cartoons. Now, you know, there does seem to be here a double standard. I also want to say Gordon is correct when he talks about how Muslims are depicted in American cartoons today. And I actually had this conversation with someone recently. Whenever we drew them or drew someone, a Muslim, it was someone in a turban, in a nose, beard. Well, as we know, there's more than a billion Muslims on the planet, and they dress and look all differently. And I think Gordon's point is well taken, that I suspect in 100 years we're going to take a step back from these cartoons and go, wow, those guys were really racist.
Is there a double standard here, Gordon Kuhnfield? Do you see it?
Perhaps there is. I think the other thing that you have to think about is that scholars have said that sometimes even with the best of intentions, you can reiterate the harm that is done by harmful images by showing them again. But there's still a pedagogical value to this and certainly a news value to this. So I hate that we keep getting drugged down into the mud over the First Amendment when I think that we all agree that the First Amendment is a really cool thing. What we're talking about here, as I've tried to say, is something more ethical. And I wonder if I could come back to something that one of the earlier callers said.
Please.
He said, why are these people so violent? And he talked about the real victims here. But really, the only victims are two guys who showed up and, to get shot so they could be martyrs, not to be too glib
about it.
Oh,
but Gordon, they wanted a large body count. You can't dismiss that. They were loaded and with explosives that they wanted to take out a lot of people. So you can't dismiss that.
I don't want to try to get into the mindset of somebody who would do this. I appreciate that it might be worth doing, but I'm just saying that they're the two that are dead over this. And again, I'm not trying to be glib about that, but I want to come back to that question: why are these people so violent? What is implied in that question? These people. It's not these two guys that caller's talking about. He's trying to characterize all Muslims as violent, and I think we have to. This is unacceptable. This does not represent a group of people accurately or ethically. And I think we need to stop thinking in that way. We didn't attribute all Americans as being violent in the wake of the Oklahoma City bombing. Why would we say that now?
Let's get Bob in here from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Bob. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'd like to bring up a point. I hear think tankers and everybody else that thinks they have the answer, but I never hear this. The Muslim community in the United States does not speak up against ISIS. Where have we ever heard them? And I think it creates a problem with the average American. I served this country. I lived in Miami. I dealt with all nationalities. I don't have a problem with it. But when this situation is going on over there, I don't hear clerics and whatever jumping up and saying, oh, they cut heads off. That's wrong. That's not the Quran.
Bob, thank you. Gordon Coonfield, how do you see it? Do you agree with Bob?
As if I understand what he's saying, I don't feel comfortable speaking for the Muslim community, even assuming that there is one single Muslim community.
I guess he's wondering
States.
If Muslim voices are part of this conversation. Speaking
well,
of,
in fact, James, Linda Souser, who came on earlier, was very, very adamant against condemning the violence.
But can we hold Pam Geller and the organizers of this event who say they just want free speech, can we hold them responsible for the actions of others who take things to violent extremes, Gordon?
I think so. Like I said earlier, words are not just words. They're ways of doing things. And whether they want to acknowledge it or not, creating these kinds of images, creating this really kind of derivative news event, it had consequences. I think she's responsible.
Here's Omar in Rochester, Minnesota. Hi, Omar. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you.
Yes.
I just wanted to make a few points. Number one is I don't think there's a gradient between free speech and hate speech. I think hate speech is just a category that fits under the freedom of speech. And another point that I wanted to make is as a Muslim American who grew up in California, who went to college, and right now about to be a doctor in the United States to help the people of the United States. I think that when an event like this takes place, I have the right to at least be offended by an event like this without being associated with the violent Muslims. Mm-hmm. You know, being offended by an event like this doesn't mean that I endorse the shooting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like I should apologize or should for ISIS or these kind of organizations, because I am not violent. When people on the radio say these people and associate me with them, I'm not one of them, and I don't feel like I have to justify myself.
And so, Bob, what do you make of the last caller, Bob, who said, boy, I'd like to see more Muslim voices in this conversation, more clerics condemning ISIS and the like. What do you say to that?
I don't think that it is my job, my duty. I mean, so the people that threw this event that was offensive to a lot of Muslims, I don't expect every American out there to stand up and say, sorry, this was just these group of people and I don't expect Americans to apologize for that event. But for some reason, people expect me to apologize for every Muslim that committed any sort of crime anywhere around the world. Mm.
So glad you called, Omar. Thank you. Scott, did you want to jump in? Or Gordon, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to just say one thing. Teaching diverse students 101, you don't look to the black student in the class every time you want to say something race or racism.
Right.
You don't look to the one female student in the class. And why is that? Because they're in the minority, and it's a form of racism to expect one individual to think, feel, and act and say exactly the same things as every other one who you happen to think looks like them. So I totally agree with the caller. I think that what we're sort of unearthing here as we scratch the surface of this as a free speech issue is that there are some deeper tensions around race and how we manage and understand it.
Here's Jody in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Jody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. My point is, while we may agree that this is free speech, we cannot ignore the reality, whether we like the fact that there are consequences or not. There are consequences. Do we reward a lack of wisdom in saying things that you know are inflammatory or creating events that you know are inflammatory?
Jody, thank you. Scott Stantis, is it fair to say that there are some who sometimes hide behind the free speech rhetoric?
Well, sure. Well, I don't think hide. I think unless you mean hiding in plain sight, I think they are protected and they can say this. But here's the thing. Omar was, what a great caller. And he brought up a couple of great points. And one I wanted to mention is that, you know, we talk about how the Muslim community doesn't stand up. It does. You know what happens? We don't hear them because the dialogue we want to hear is we get some, you know, bad crap, crazy, guy from the Dakotas spouting something in favor of ISIS. And that's what gets the news and that's what gets the coverage. Omar doesn't stand up because, A, he said he doesn't feel like he has to, and he doesn't. He's an American. But, two, he's busy having a life. He's going to be a physician. He's going to help people. And so it's not his job to stand up there. But there are voices, there are imams across the country who are saying exactly that. That, you know, that this is wrong, and so it's preposterous and it's stereotypical. So saying that they hide behind First Amendment. Listen, I said earlier at the top of this segment that I think people have a right to say stupid stuff, and they do. And I think it's also important that they do it because then we can identify the dumb ones.
Let's get Garrett in here from Watertown, New York. Garrett, welcome to the program. Hello.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Go ahead, please. You're on the air.
Oh, certainly. As a former teacher of 14 years and a professional artist, this type of event down in Texas, this art event, you know, I have mixed reactions about it as being, I'd have to say it was a lame, very easy thing to put together versus something that would require a lot more thought, a lot more energy of bringing artists from different regions together to have art exhibits, artist interactions, exchanges, and then, you know, real discussions versus this provoking. This was done to provoke. No doubt about it. They knew exactly what they're doing in terms of the reaction that could possibly happen, which then they got, you know, and unfortunately that, you know, luckily that was stopped. But
before it took a lot of lives. Yeah. Garrett, thank you very much for the call. Here's Chris in Buffalo. Chris, welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you. I just wanted to make the comment that, you know, our country wasn't just built on free speech. We also all have the human right of the freedom of belief. And part of the beliefs of the Muslim religion, from what I understand, is that you're actually not going to depict an image of Muhammad, whether it be a caricature with a hooked nose and look like Nazi propaganda, or whether it be even a beautiful drawing. And with that knowledge that this is somebody else's belief, then you also have to look at it from that point, too. It comes from being educated about human rights, and you have to temper all of those things. That's an educated society, or we have chaos.
Chris, thank you very much for the call. Gordon Goonfield, wrap us up here in our last couple of minutes. What's the message? What's the takeaway from this hour, from what we've seen over the last few days?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think, first of all, we need to stop allowing people and organizations like this to hijack our media. There are so many more important things to be covering right now. But it was the fact of the anti-Islamic nature of the event and the fact that she was successful in provoking a reaction that sort of have taken over. I think we need to really think about how we communicate and the kinds of worlds that we make. And ask ourselves, do we want to live in a world where we just say things in order to be offensive? Or do we want to live in a world where we respect one another's autonomy of belief and autonomy of practice?
Scott Stantis, you get the last word.
Well, I want to live in a world that can do both. I would love to have a world of manners where we respect each other's views. But I think that we also have a right to say what we believe and say it out loud in a public. I have a right to be outraged by it and to condemn it. But violence is never an appropriate response. Violence, in this case, violence just confirms the stereotype that, frankly, a woman who I would say is racist in nature, this just confirmed the point she was trying to make. So violence, never appropriate. First Amendment, great.
Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist at the Chicago Tribune. Couldn't say it better, huh? It's great to have you on today, Scott. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Also, Gordon Coonfield, communications professor at Villanova University. Real pleasure to speak with you as well. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you both for a great conversation.
Thank you. You can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Thank you, listeners, as well. Terrific comments. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.